And this hour on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be talking about visitations, particularly sky phenomena in particular. Also, the apparitions at Fatima. Get ready. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Clarissa Pinkola Estes, doctor. Let's talk about your work now, Untie the Strong Woman. And first of all, you have specialized in this. You're the best-selling author of a book called Women Who Run with the Wolves. What was that one about, Clarissa?
That's about the inner life of how we begin in a sort of a dragon fight in the world, and then we move into what Jung called the night sea journey, where you stop trying to climb the ladder. You leave the collective, as you talk about a lot. You go away from all the institutions you've been taught to support in with your blood and bones. And you keep your blood for yourself and your bones for yourself, and you go on a journey. And so the book is 17 tales, myths, folk tales that come out of my own family and all of their understanding of both worlds, to talk to people about how to become a true individual and not one who is created by culture but created by the soul.
Did you expect to sell over a million copies?
No. No.
Is that amazing?
It was, George. It was stunning, in fact. And it was that was 20 years ago, and the book is in print and sells well still.
That's great.
It's published in many languages. Incidentally, Farsi, Chinese, mainland Chinese, and Turkish are the most recent ones just this past year.
I have been fascinated since I was a boy about the visitations and apparitions, and you've touched on a lot of this in your new work.
Yes.
I also remember my mother would go to events where they would bring the statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
And this was the statue that many people believed would cry. So they would, so it would go from,
right,
city to city to city.
Right.
And all these people were in there praying, and it
like
was
Zelig.
And I think I'm like 10 years old watching this, and I'm looking at this statue, and I'm waiting for it to cry,
yeah,
or I'm waiting for it to blink its eyes at me,
and I
know I was going to freak out if that happened, and nothing ever happened. But there are some very strange phenomena associated with this. Just tell us a few things that you've been working on that you put into your book.
All right. First of all, I want to go back just for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because you said something really important that has happened to a lot of people. When you talked about how your religion, Catholicism, which is a religious background you and I share,
mm-hmm,
that it cut you off from meeting other people spiritually at the same level because it was fundamentalist. It said, you must do it, and you must do it this way and this way only, and there is no other way, and you must always have a middleman, was essentially what it was. And you're right that fundamentalism, whether it's in government or in corporations or in religious institutions or in art programs or in education programs, causes people to be separate from one another. It makes a dividing line so that they can never meet each other, soul to soul, spirit and spirit, and embrace one another. Instead, they're in some sort of contentious relationship about who's right and who's wrong. So you're very right about that. My grandmother used to say, we belong to the church of the people, not the church of the Pope, and God rest her. And I hope they won't call her a heretic, but it was true. She said, we belong to, she would point and speak about this in Untie the Strong Woman, that we'd be walking to church, and she would say, see that church? And we'd say, yes, that's our church. She'd say, no, that's not our church. We'd say, no, come on, that's our church. We go there every week. That's our church. She'd say, no, our church is underneath that church. The church we belong to is underneath.
Well, all right, she was. Okay, let's get into this, these visitations. People have reported seeing the Blessed Virgin for years, since the beginning of time. What's going on here?
Centuries. Well, as I understand it, again, we're wired to apprehend, to sense, to gather up, extra stimulus that comes from outside of ourselves. Whether it's an electricity, whether it's a force behind the images, in archetypal psychology, which is the kind of psychology that I do, archetypal means that there is a huge force in the world. Call it whatever you like. We are too small to comprehend it, but we have representations of it that we recognize, such as whatever force stands behind the Great Woman, Holy Mother, the Great Mother, with any number of the names she's called, Kuan Yin. So in the Quran, she's called Miriam, Mary, Maryam.
Why different names? Because she's just seen all over the place?
People in their own individual tribal groups and cultures have words that they create literally in order to name her according to, I think, the biosphere they live in. And I'll give you an example.
All right.
I drove the Pan American Highway when I was a young woman, all the way from Denver all the way to the tip of Panama. Then on a later trip, floated my car across to South America and drove to the tip of Tierra del Fuego. On that road, which is a crude road, of many, 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 many miles, I met literally thousands of people who all had a devotion to Holy Mother, but they all called her different things according to where they lived. So if they grew a lot of maize, they would call her Zilonen, which means, in some sense, the queen of the corn, the queen of the maize. If they lived near the ocean, they would call her Mir, or Miralago, meaning she is the woman of the ocean. And people who were shipbuilders would call her accordingly, and people who were weavers would call her accordingly. And it appears that she's called many, many, many names. This force, understand that the statue that cries is a phenomena that is separate from the force that is behind that phenomena. The force behind the phenomena is what I'm talking about in my work. And I'm talking about how the representations of that force show up in everyday life for many, many, many people. In Fatima, Lourdes, Medjugorje, the churches wanted to say whether this is a sighting, a true apparition of Holy Mother. And it is decided by whether the people are devout Catholics or not, by whether they are agree with the doctrines and the dogmas of the church and so on and so forth. And my experience in my life, but also in the world, of all the people I've worked with, who Holy Mother and Jesus and Krishna and all manner of huge forces have appeared to, including lights in the sky, moving stars, all manner of things, in order to help them, often in moments of tremendous peril or crisis, is that whether anybody approves or not, the Holy shows up anyway. It just keeps showing up, no matter who says, this is right, this is wrong. The Catholic Church has a test that they send out their examiners, and they test the people who claim that they have seen Holy Mother or any other apparition, for that matter.
And they pass the test, don't they?
Well, they only have three determinations. One is that, yes, the person is devout and it actually happened. The second one, which I decry very deeply, is that they're mentally ill. And that's why they say they saw what they saw. That is one of the most spurious, slanderous things you can say to people, because the Holy shows up to people in every condition, no matter what their condition is. It is not invalidated by the fact that they are depressed, or they have anxiety, or they are traumatized, or they have schizophrenia, or they have neurasthenia, or bipolar disorder, or any number of things. It absolutely does not disqualify people from contacting or being contacted by what is greater than themselves. And the third disposition is that they can't tell. They don't know. There's not enough evidence to know one way or the other. So the not knowing one way or the other actually has closed down a lot of people who feel very devout and feel that they have seen something that is greater than themselves, that is holy, that is enlightening, that is lifting, that is healing, that is touches a person, makes them a better, gives them insight, makes them feel radiant, makes them feel at rest or at peace in a way they haven't felt for ages upon ages. And so that happens to people where they say, we don't know one way or the other. But people who are determined that they're mentally ill, it's like putting a scourge on them, was like putting a curse on them, saying that you're not worthy because you have whatever you have.
Clarissa, are these visitations meant to send a message?
I believe so, yes. Okay. But I would remind you of this, and one of my, I belong to a group of nuns who are called the Sisters of Charity out of Leavenworth. I'm what they call an associate.
It's like, you're not a nun, are you?
I take a vow.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I am not a nun. I'm not a consecrated nun.
Okay.
But what we do is we pray together, we learn together, we study together, we support each other. There are nurse nuns, administrative hospital nuns, doctor nuns.
That's true.
I met them in my post-trauma work. So we all became, and this is what one of them, Sister Char, was a beautiful woman, said to me. She said, Thomas Aquinas said, and I'm paraphrasing, that Creator gives us the clear message, but it has to pass through mud. That would be us. That
Good
the mind
point.
Is like a little bit, you know, foggy. That's how I would put it.
Sometimes a lot foggy.
That's right. So that let's say the message is consciousness, awareness that we are huge, enormous part of being, of mindfulness, of ability to perceive beyond just our carapace that we came from, like our turtle shell that we came with. We're able to swim the oceanic ideas and creativity to bring true and good things to this world, inventions, cures, ideas, beauty, all the things that the soul craves so deeply. But it passes through mud, so sometimes the message is diluted. Sometimes it is taken off in some direction that may not be useful. And I want to tell a little story, if I could, right here.
Okay, sure. Please.
Okay. In Women Who Run with Wolves, and also in my book, Untie the Strong Woman, I reference this little story that I learned as a child from my family. Four rabbis were taken up into the seventh vault of the seventh heaven to see the wheel of Ezekiel, which spun with stars, with fire. And when they came back to earth, one rabbi went out of his mind. He could not conceptualize what he had seen. Another one talked about it constantly, became a charlatan who said, oh, well, I saw this, and it meant that, and it meant this other, and you should do this, and you should do that. And a third one said, oh, you know what? I really didn't see anything. I just imagined it all. I just didn't really see anything. And the fourth rabbi, he sat at the window of his cottage with his little boy on his lap, and they wrote a poem about the evening star. Now, poetry is and music, which, and I know you like music. I like a lot of the music you play on your program.
Thank you. Thanks.
Your knowing that music and poetry are the words and the ways that we use to talk about something you can't talk about in regular prosaic language. So the fourth rabbi was trying to talk about the experience, but in a language that can talk about what we call the psychoid unconscious. The psychoid unconscious is beyond our usual consciousness. It is a eerie, often odd way of grasping and knowing things. Not believing them, George, knowing them, because you have a physical feeling with them.
How do we know these visitations aren't extraterrestrial? And let me cite an example. During Fatima, the people there said, and there was a picture of this in one of their newspapers in Portugal, that the sun came down.
Right.
Now, you know and I know that astrologically speaking, if the sun came down, we're cooked, we're toast, we're history.
Maybe.
I think they were looking at a shiny object, which might have been a UFO. How do we know that these apparitional sightings, these visitations, aren't based on some kind of UFO extraterrestrial visitation?
You know, my honest feeling is that you could call, first of all, The concept that the sun will burn us if it comes too close to us is perhaps too small a concept, because maybe it is possible the sun can come, and it can come very close, but it will not burn because it has this other feature to it that we very seldom see or know about.
I don't know.
How would we know?
You want to bet? You want to bet a dinner with me?
Bet a dinner with you about what?
If the sun comes down, we're toast.
Well, wait a minute. I would say to you that naturalists for years have said that wolves only behave in certain ways, or elephants only be elephants. Elephants are often portrayed as these sympathetic, beautiful, darling human beings who do nothing but love each other. They make rituals when one of them has died. They all gather together around the dead body. And so, but you know what? If you see elephants out in the bush, you'll see elephants who are the aunts of elephants who are very young kick that elephant practically to death just because they are jealous.
Well, I've seen some trainers get stomped to death.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, the thing is,
if you go after one of the baby elephants, look out, because they'll charge you.
The
mothers will.
When you would read the literature on what never happened or never could happen, what it was people who had observed what they had observed, and they didn't imagine anything else could happen. I'm a realist, so I know the sun will and can burn. I know it's a flaming star that's close to our planet. But I'm saying, and frankly, I wish I could agree with you, because then I would be able to go to dinner with you. I think that I have to say that I, in the broadest sense...
Well, if you won, you'd get the dinner. If I won, we'd be all burned up in toast.
No. Then we'd have a barbecue together.
Yeah, really.
But my point is this, that we don't know what people are. There were 70,000 people at Fatima. That's what it was estimated. I mean, it was an enormous group of people.
And they saw something. They witnessed something.
They saw something. And yeah. People have said, well, it was a group hallucination. And okay, fine. And other people said they actually saw something. Well, what if it was both? What if it was a complete and total sudden change in consciousness that allowed them to see something that was real?
Possible. I'm not going to rule that out.
We're not sure. But from my point of view, and I know that you understand this because you speak about it, how the effect it had on the people is more important than what was seen, the effect that it had, because it sacralized them. It made sacred something in them that they were longing for. You have to remember, at Fatima, was just in the midst of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Portugal was decimated. They were living in a serf vassal culture. The people were incredibly poor. They were used as animals by others who were the ruling class of that time. And in the midst of all that, here is Francisco, who is like 8 years old, and Jacinta, who I think is 9. And I think that Lucia maybe was 10.
She just passed away a few years ago, right?
That's right. She lived to be, I think, 96. But the two little ones, the little boy and the little girl, they died within 2 years after this visitation.
Yeah.
They died at, I think, age 10 and 11. They contracted remember the flu epidemic?
Oh, absolutely.
Over Europe?
Yeah. Yeah, hold on for a second. We're going to be back in a moment, Dr. Estes. We'll talk more about this, the apparitions and the sightings, next. Well, if you're looking for an inexpensive Christmas gift, you might want to give a Coast Insiders Club membership to somebody you care about. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and fill out all the information. It's less than 25 cents a day. It makes a great little gift for you. We're going to take phone calls next hour with our special guest, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, as we talk about her work, Untie the Strong Woman. And when I come back, we'll get more into apparitions right here on Coast to Coast AM. So in your opinion, Clarissa, what did those children see?
Well, I think they saw something that was speaking to them. I'm not, you know, entirely sure, but I can tell you that you yourself and myself and the people who are listening tonight, that they know the difference between looking at a nice table at a restaurant that's laden with food and being present at the birth of a child.
Yes.
They know the difference of how they are almost irradiated by the birth of a child. And yeah, the food's interesting and nice and it's thrilling in its own little way, but it's not the same. And it's such a different consciousness to behold something that is greater than oneself and to wonder what the heck it is. You know, most people don't realize that at Lourdes with Bernadette, but also at Fatima, that neither in of those situations did the children or the child name that was Blessed Mother. That they said they saw white shine that as though through fire, through a crystal. That's what the children said, especially Lucia at Fatima. Okay. And Bernadette Subriel said, I saw light and wind. And it wasn't until the 5th, 6th, 10th, 18th visitation when people elicited, I think is the right word, from the children, who was it, who is it, who is it, who is it, who is it, that they said, oh, it was the Immaculate Heart, or it was Our Lady of the Rosary, or it was this one or that one. And that's very important because that's how it seems when people do be visited in an apparition or a visitation. At first, they do not know often what it is exactly. They don't have a name for it. It's extero. It's not of our world. Why would they know right away, right? And yet, apparently, in those visitations, including Medjugorje, there is a conversation that develops between whatever it is that is appearing. At Fatima, many people don't realize that Our Lady didn't appear first. First appeared an angel. Several times, in fact. It was like how we call it in Spanish. There's a name for people like you, incidentally. There's a name for people like us who have not lost our perception of a larger mind. We're called in Spanish Los Bravos. It means the heralds. It is related to, you could easily relate it to an angelic bloodline that comes to tell what has been seen. May not be able to explain absolutely everything because we're human, but says, I see. And not only that, I see how this is good and how it can be used for good. So the children who saw all of these things didn't initially know what they were seeing, and later they identified it as Holy Mother. Now, that goes back to what I was saying before, that these great forces that appear to be in the universe, that come to visit us, they're too enormous for us to understand, so we tend to break them down into representations we ourselves can understand.
Well, it's like if we took a submarine to somebody back 2,000 years ago, they wouldn't know what it was.
Correct.
But they would try to describe it the best way they could.
That's a great example. That's perfect. That's a perfect example. That's exactly right. But people... And as I said, in the four rabbi story of going to see Ezekiel's wheel on fire in the seventh vault of the seventh heaven, there are people who pretend that they know and pretend that they can talk about all of it and tell you exactly what it all is and how they should behave, how everyone should behave. And you see that in that little story where one becomes a charlatan. You also see people who are beaten down who say, well, I must have imagined. I really did. Because there's no support for imagination. Imagination is not the same as fantasy. Imagination is equipment. Imagination is perception. Imagination is a way of knowing. Fantasy is making up things just for the heck of making them up. But imagination is a tool. It is a sense. It is an implement. And it allows us to see the other world. Now, people want proof of various and sundry. And, you know, your grandmother and my grandmother would say things like, you know, if you need proof, then you don't have the eyes to see or the ears to hear the other world, right?
Are there still miracles being done at Lourdes right now?
People say yes. People report so. Yes, they do. And, they, you know, some people say, well, that's because they believed what they believed before they even got there. So, but you know what? None of us can know that. We can't measure that. We have no idea. But I think that listening to what people say, and especially listening to their happiness, if they feel that they've received a healing, is how we relate and bridge each other and how we embrace each other. And that's what's to be done, rather than attempt to cut down the bridges that are made between us by spirit.
If these visitations are real, Clarissa, and we've agreed that there's some kind of an event, there's something going on, do you think there's a message here for some major calamity or some kind of message that they need us to understand worldwide?
I tend not to think in those directions, mainly because, you know, I'm a journalist and I write for a political news blog as well as for the National Catholic Reporter. And what I do see are tons of people who are living decently with one another, who care for one another, who give to each other, who tend to one another, who have sympathy and mercy for each other, and who do good in the world, who invent things and create things and help people. So what I sense, it was just my two cents worth, George, is that we know more now than we ever did because of the internet, because of television, because of radio, but also especially because of the internet. All these things that are going on in the world, as far as I can see, when I look between the world, have been going on since forever, but we did not have consciousness of them. It's overwhelming, in a sense, to have consciousness of everything all at once, but I think we're being called to raise up high our consciousness. I taught a few months ago with Rigoberto Menchú Tum, who is the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Guatemala. She is a K'iche Mayan Indian. And people asked her, you know, what does 2012 really mean? And she said, when people have it wrong, what it means on the Mayan calendar is a time of no time. In other words, a transition time in which there can be, should people use their consciousness, their awareness, which is different than being awake, their awareness in order to hold the world and other humans and animals, creatures, air, and the universe in a much higher way than they have previously, because they've been given this incredible knowledge of the world and of the universe, just really even in the last 20 years. So they have opportunity now. And that old things that no longer serve begin to die now.
People report seeing the Holy Mother on toast, on glass window panes, everywhere. Yes. What is this? Is this just a figment of their imagination or what?
I saw a darling old woman on TV who brought a potato chip that she put in the shape of Blessed Mother. And I just kept thinking, don't eat that. It'll go away. Right. I have to tell you, and I heard you say this earlier, and I agree with you, just at the root level, that we don't make fun of people or ridicule people for what they find holy. No. As long as it brings good and it harms no one, it seems like it's perfectly all right. And, you know, my grandmother used to say that if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? And if you're a devotee of something, maybe almost everything you look at has some essence of whatever it is you know to be true for you in it. So I feel like, you know, find Holy Mother on a rock or on a piece of toast or Jesus on a, you know, on a cracker or whatever it is, it's okay with me. Because usually the people who believe that, they are so harmless. I'm more interested in the people who do evil. I'm more interested in the people who do abject evil to others.
Well, let's bring that up for a moment. We've got a few minutes here before the top of the hour. Why are there so many people out there that are out to take advantage, to hurt, to do whatever they do?
You know, I actually don't think there are that many. I used to say there were 100 men, and I use that word advisedly because I never, ever speak against men. I watched my own family men be hounded and harassed by others' men as I was growing up. I have sympathy that men live in a very competitive world where they tend to try to get a leg up and beat each other down. So it's not that, but because of the way the cultures work across the world, it's mostly men who are in huge power. And 100 men, I would expand it nowadays because I know more of the world now to 1,000. There are 1,000. Think of Than Shwe of Burma, which is now he renamed Myanmar. Think of what he has done to the Kerong people, who are the tribal people there, by raising the price of their cooking oil. That caused all the Buddhist monks to come out to demonstrate peacefully because Than Shwe had just had a $1 million wedding for his daughter with diamonds all over her dress and so forth. And meanwhile, the people are starving to death. He will not allow the person who was duly elected, who is a woman, to lead Burma. He has her under house arrest now for nearly 20 years. That's a person who has no goodness in his heart that I can tell. But he's one of the 1,000 who holds sway. And worse than that, he employs Buddhists in his army. Buddhists are forbidden to kill or to harm a living creature. And yet their people are starving to death. So he employs them and pays them and keeps their families in food if they will do his bidding. What kind of devil does that to a person who is religious, who says, if you kill for me, your family will be fed and they will not die?
I know, but there are a lot of devils like that.
That's exactly right. But there are far more of us, far, far more of us. But we'll have to wake up and we'll have to be in solidarity. You know, I'm a union member. I belong to the National Writers Union, and we're AFL-CIO, sublocal.
Oh, sure. A strong union.
We're with the tough guys, which I really love. I feel always feel safe with the tough guys like you. So the thing is that we know what it means to have solidarity if you're in a union. It means you can disagree about everything. Anything you want to disagree about, you can. But you have to remain in agreement about the one thing, and that is to resist and to push forward for justice. The people of the world, in pockets of the world, do that. Certainly Quakers do that. There are other groups of people. Amnesty International does that. There are lots of groups of people who are watching, who are watchdogs, who are peeling back the ocean. You know, Salvador Dali painted a painting of a child peeling back the ocean, showing all the yuck and the guts and the fish and everything else underneath the ocean. And it's like that in our culture now, except we need more solidarity. And you're seeing it because of the internet, because of cell phones. You're seeing it break out all over the world where people are able to communicate with each other. Hey, we're doing this in Iran. Are you doing this in Pakistan? Yeah, we're doing it in Pakistan. Are you doing it in Somalia? Yeah, we are. We're doing it in the United States. We're doing it, down in Florida, in Tampa, in Denver, in New York. But we're also doing it in the backwaters as well. And this gives courage to people, I have great hope for the future. And maybe I have, the pep.
Well, no, I do too. I agree. It's going to be a bumpy road to get there.
Always has been.
Yeah, but I have hope. What do you think of end times, Clarissa?
Well, tell me what you think.
Well, I think predictions and prophecy are pretty darn accurate. I think there are some people out there now, some people who have been on this planet before that were very good at this, the Edgar Cayces and people like that.
Right.
And I think that they have foreseen some horrendous things in our future before things get good. And I think we're going to go through these. I think we're going to go through massive climate change, though I believe this is an early, man may be contributing to some of this, but this was going to happen anyway. This planet is going through a cycle.
I would agree with that.
And we go through
the, the eons are very long. That's true.
Doesn't mean we should be polluting. Doesn't mean we should be using oil, but that's a different matter. That's another show. But I do think we're going to be headed for some very difficult times sooner than later before maybe mankind gets to a point where they say, enough is enough. We're tired of wars. We're tired of all this. We should be on this planet to feed people, to give them spirituality, to make them enjoy their life, whether they're working for a small amount of money or whether they're very successful. That doesn't bother me. You know, it's not offensive to me if some guy goes out and legitimately makes a lot of money for himself and his family.
Right.
I just don't like the den of thieves that are out there.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and that's why the Occupy Wall Street folks, you know, though they want a share of equity, you know, I'm not all for sharing equity. I don't think people deserve to be given things, but we should be helping people, and that's a big difference.
Well, yeah. I think that's built into our genetics, actually. I think people who don't help people are actually, something has gone awry. I think it's built right into us. If you watch little children, they're the best indicators of the best in the human race. They cry when other little children cry. They try to comfort other little children when they fall down. They try to run for help if someone's injured. That's most little children. And that's us. That's how we are. That's how we're built. This is how we came here. I think that with regard to end times, I tend to, again, not know exactly. I mean, I do read the book of Revelation, which incidentally, Holy Mother is listed big time in Revelation as woman clothed with the sun. Mm-hmm. She is this beautiful being that can stand in the light of everything and not die from the fire. She's like the ultimate phoenix. That is the force, incidentally, that stands behind her. That is what that is. But we understand her in images because we're not great-minded enough to.
All right, but I agree with you. Whole. I think we're going to be okay when it comes down to it.
I'm pretty sure we are because, frankly, when I study cataclysm of our Earth, just within, say, the last 200 years. They are enormous, and the man-made ones, just in terms of the conquest, I mean, a huge number, part of the world is Spanish-speaking because they were murdered into it. You understand?
Yeah.
The language, the Han language in China, it dominates China because they were murdered into it because of invasions by that group of people. They have had Holocausts that are unbelievable over the last 200 years. We know about the Armenian Holocaust. We know about the Holocaust of Jews in Europe. But we tend to only know about those. But there are many, many of them. So my sense is that whatever it is that is loose, that is evil, and maybe that is another time we can talk about evil, because evil is real. It is true.
Evil
is real.
There's no doubt about that.
Burn you to the ground.
All right, well, stay with us, Clarissa. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back. We're going to take phone calls with you next as we talk about visitations, apparitions, consciousness. Phone lines are open, and I shall be right back on Coast to Coast AM.